We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Archaeology Show. This is a live recording. Is that what, is that? I always say live recording, but those are two words that are not in the same sentence or shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, that would imply that there's an audience here. Oh, wait, there is sort of an audience.
Yes, I guess there is. Yeah, it's not a studio audience. It's a it's a Facebook audience and a YouTube audience, which I think is what the pings you're getting from your phone are.
I know.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is a recording of the You Call This Archaeology Show with myself, Chris Webster, and
Richie Cruz.
And if you want to watch us live instead of recorded, then check out the facebook.com/arcpodnet or
Happy Archaeology Fun Time on YouTube. And that's not one word. It's like all separate words.
Yes, but it is all one word if you're typing in the URL because because you have a website too.
Oh, shoot. I keep forgetting to update it.
Yeah. No so way. Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us. I've got this new, we got a slightly different setup here, which is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
We just decided to take the complication away, I think, because we've been doing a lot of different things to use these microphones to stream to multi-sources. But then I got this GoPro. Richie's always had this fantastic Android phone.
LG.
Yeah. And so I'm sending to Facebook via the GoPro Hero 8 Black, and Richie's sending to YouTube via his LG phone.
Yeah.
And then I've got a nice studio light, which is blinding us, but makes us look good on the other side of the glass here.
Well, we got to suffer.
I know. There you go. So.
Oh, wait. I realized that we haven't, you know, like God, we haven't had a live stream since before the primary. Or no, not the primary, the caucus here. Not that we're going to talk about that.
Well, I mean, we can bring in politics just a little bit because today I saw that Tom Steyer backed out of the race, which is great because I don't know how much mail I get from that guy.
Oh my God, no, it's not. Well, I mean, I do get a lot of mail. I got a lot of mail from him, but it was the constant YouTube videos.
Like I haven't. Oops. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been seeing him on YouTube. I've seen the commercials. You mean?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I saw while we were doing the CRM Arc live stream. Pete Buttigieg backed out as well. Which is a little surprising.
Really?
Yeah, he had some good momentum. I think Biden winning South Carolina just like took the wind out of his sails.
Oh.
But backing out before Super Tuesday? I mean, come on. That's kind of like the clincher right there. At least stay in for a couple more days. Or they're doing the honorable thing and backing out saying I can't possibly win, so I'm not going to cloud the I'm not going to cloud the race. I don't know.
There is one thing I will say though. I thought it was funny that they still that MSNBC would not declare for Bernie Sanders until like almost all the precincts were reporting, but they projected by Biden as the winner with only 1% reporting.
Right, right.
And I imagine, you know, I just want to see like if Bernie Sanders wins the nomination, I want to see like Chris Matthews burst out into tears because I feel like that's like the level of hysteria that he and like so many other like centrist Democrats have.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my God. Ugh.
And let me tell you something.
Yeah.
We diverge a lot from archaeology on this show.
Yeah.
But, and sometimes when we're talking about, you know, construction in Reno or Richie's video editing software, we're really off the wall in archaeology. However, this does have a serious impact on the field of archaeology.
Oh, that's true.
Contract archaeology.
Yeah, because Donald Trump definitely wants to dismantle, you know, any sort of Section 106 protections.
Yeah, I mean, the National Historic Preservation Act has been on the chopping block for a long time, at least to be stripped of all its powers. It probably wouldn't go away entirely, but and there's a lot of there's a lot of environmental things going on. Like, for example, you know, I'm trying not to pay attention to the headlines because the headlines are written to be inflammatory, even from left-leaning groups. But the blowing up of Native American grave sites to make the wall down on the Mexico border.
Yeah.
I've seen articles, you know, I saw a flurry of articles for about 3 or 4 days last week talking about that. I think I don't know what the reality is.
Oh,
I'm not going to comment on that.
That's actually interesting because I have a friend who I worked with in on a project in Minnesota, and he was actually doing the preliminary kind of monitoring down there, and he says, like, it's all wrong.
It's all wrong.
Yeah. Like, he was actually down there watching them do some of this stuff, and he's like, no.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because when you're doing archaeology and you've got construction companies and things like that out there, I mean, sure, Donald Trump might be able to say, I want this thing to happen. However, there are a whole lot of other people in the chain of command for this whole thing, right?
True.
And when you're out there doing a project, I mean, a lot of people are not in direct communication with the president of the United States.
True.
And it is an eminent domain national security project. Whether you want to see it that way or not, that's how it's being billed, right?
I know.
So it's an eminent domain. I mean, we're working on an eminent domain national security project next week.
I know.
Okay, it's just in a different spot. Okay, so if there's land that the military or the government wants to take to do something that they think is important, they're going to do it. It doesn't matter if it's 1,000 miles from the border or on the border. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the point is, though, they still have to follow regulations. And if there's archaeologists out there, you know, they still have a job to do. If there's construction people out there, they still have a job to do. And people are still humans too. And I like to think that, you know, there aren't people on that project that are just like looking at a paycheck going, yay, Republicans, and just mowing through stuff, right?
Ha.
So I'm willing to believe, if I really thought about it, that it's probably some inflammatory headlines, but I'm just going to tell you right now, if there are active known sites right there, which more than likely there are, but if there are active known sites right there and they're going through those sites, it's not the first time that's happened.
No.
I'm not saying that's a good thing.
No.
I'm not justifying it.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, if you live in the San Francisco Bay Area, almost every freeway goes through a Native American shell mound site.
Well, yeah, and how many are underwater because of our environment? I mean, there wasn't a San Francisco Bay 3,000 years ago.
Well, 4,000.
4,000 years ago, whatever it was, you know. But as the sea levels rose, it's so shallow out there that it just covered up a whole bunch of sites.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, you know how easy it is to dredge through a site? Pretty easy. Because they dredge all the time.
Yeah.
And because it's underwater and nobody is there to see it or complain about it, I'm sure they're dredging through archaeology constantly.
Well, it's also interesting because I know, you know, I mean, on a similar topic, it's interesting that scrap metal prices have hit a point where people are going to these old World War II shipwrecks and just like scrapping the old warships.
Sure.
You know, which is kind of gross when you think about it, because, like, you know, there are definitely people in there.
Yeah.
Ugh, just thinking about it, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know, that's like a zombie or a horror movie right there.
Right, right. Ugh. Hey, I'll comment right now. Again, this is for the, if you're listening to the recording of this show, join us live. If you like the Archaeology Podcast Network Facebook page, you'll get notification. And I'm sure if you subscribe to Richie's channel, hit the bell, you'll get notified when he goes live as well.
Hopefully.
I got an email and a push notification when you went live.
Wait, really?
So, yeah, I saw it.
Wow. Cool.
As I was setting up mine, I saw yours coming through.
Cool.
But I wanted to say we've got Ryan Scott has joined. He joins us all the time, as well as Chuck Hutchison. Chuck, you're a glutton for punishment because he was on the last recording we just did.
Oh.
Literally 30 minutes ago, we stopped.
I also thought it was interesting because I thought the feedback from some of the people doing participating in the chat for the CRM arc recording was interesting. Like, you know, like, who was it, Chuck, who mentioned, you know, I'm over this topic.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy that. Like, you know, you can ask for topics live on air and stuff like that.
That's great. Yeah. And it's an amazing way to really crowdsource the topics, because especially for something like the CRM Archaeology Podcast and even this show.
Yeah.
I mean, we come prepared to talk about stuff because we want to put out commentary and talk about stuff, but I'm more than happy to talk about what the audience wants to talk about, right? Except the only person I will not accept comments from is Carlton Gover, who has also joined us, because he's, you know, probably drunk anyway, just like when Connor joined us from the Life and Ruins podcast. So, you know, Carlton, if you want to comment, feel free, but otherwise, you know, stay out of it. However, I'm just kidding, Carlton. Say whatever you want. One thing that my co-founder Tristan Boyle and I were talking about, and Carlton, if you're still on, this will be news to you, but I want to go forward with this, is you've seen other like social media accounts where they say, hey, this person is taking over the social media account for a week or for a day or something like that. Well, two things I want to do with the APN, because it's unfortunately, a lot of people see this as kind of my show. And yes, it was my idea. Yes, I started it. Yes, I started it with Tristan. And yes, I do all the editing and stuff. But I've never wanted this to be like this is my show.
Yeah.
Like the APN is my show. Like it's my thing to do. And I'm just, Carlton comments, you bastard. Anyway, the APN is yes, it's kind of like my passion project, but I want so many other people to be involved with it. And so I think the Life in Ruins guys would be a great first test case on this, or it would lose us many, many people as followers. But I want them to like take over our Instagram feed for a week. You know, give them the credentials to the APN so they can live stream here on the network.
I know Coffee Bar was doing that for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to be careful in some cases because you're talking to a very wide audience that is not necessarily like the Life in Ruins audience.
True.
Knows what to expect out of a Life in Ruins podcast.
Yeah.
But the APN audience in general is a little bit more, how should I say, it's a little bit more broad than that, right? Like there's people that are of different walks of life, different countries, different nationalities. And honestly, there's concerns about Facebook as well. Like you can get banned from Facebook for, you know, broadcasting certain things, just like you can for YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
If you break the community guidelines, you know, you have to be careful about that kind
of
stuff.
Well, one of my favorite YouTubers, oh darn, now it's too over. But one of my favorite YouTubers, like, he basically called an end to, like, his show, or at least, you know, one of his favorites, you know, one of his highest rated shows.
Yeah.
Where he basically, it's like a little talk show he does on Fridays.
All right.
You know, he's actually, like, I found him because he repairs guitar amps, you know, and I like old tech and stuff. And that used to be his main thrust of his channel. And then he started doing, like, you know, music industry stuff.
Okay.
And apparently YouTube does not like his videos anymore because of that.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which is
weird.
Yeah, which he thought was really weird too. And I was also surprised. Wow, I was surprised how much he doesn't get as many views as some other people I watch, but he actually got a surprising amount of money from each video.
Right.
He got like $300 or $400 for each video.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And he's only getting like what? Sometimes 20,000-30,000 views total.
Wow. I wonder if he gets a higher percentage with more subscribers or something. I don't know how that works.
Well, he also pointed out that all his trouble started when he hit the 100K mark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Carlton commented, by the way, little backstory.
Yeah.
So we, Tristan Boyle at our 5-year anniversary a few months ago started a blog on the APN, on the APN website. So arcpodnet.com. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's /blog if he did it right. Anyway. So he asked, oh my God, here it goes. David and Connor just joined simultaneously. So they're probably in the same bedroom together watching this on a laptop, sitting on a pillow in between them. Anyway, so Tristan asked if other people would want to do guest blog posts.
Yeah.
On the APN blog, you know, for the other hosts, right?
Yeah, I've seen that on Slack.
Yeah. So actually, the Life in Ruins guys, I think they were the first ones to submit one. They just submitted it last night. I'm not even sure Tristan's seen it yet.
Yeah.
And now Carlton's like, first you want blog posts, now you want us to run your social media campaign. There better be a yacht trip involved. Carlton, I promise we'll double your salary.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, you have a boat.
I have a boat. I don't have a yacht. I mean, if you make it to San Francisco or Lake Tahoe this summer, there's 100% a boat trip involved.
See?
So there you go.
Wait, are you ready to talk about that that podcast you were thinking of with the boat?
Not until we do it.
Ah.
I don't want to commit to something that I'm possibly not going to do.
Oh, interesting.
But I will tell you that the way business expenses work, you have to use stuff for your business expenses. Although I'm probably going to be selling the boat this summer because I've got kind of a line on how to do that.
Ooh.
Because we want to get more mobile and the boat's not very conducive to that.
Yeah.
That boat anyway.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, other podcasts and other YouTube like things, like as you're watching, if you're watching this on the live stream, it's March 1st. If you're listening to this on the You Call Us Archaeology Show recording again, March 1st.
Yeah.
And it was, we just dropped, my wife and I started, we're using an old YouTube channel that I've had that has very little things on it. And I've cleaned it up a bit.
And you renamed it.
And we renamed it because I've watched a lot of videos on, well, two things. One, I've watched a lot of YouTube videos on people who are out doing fun, cool things and they inspire me to do the same thing, right? That's what I think those videos are for.
Yeah.
But I also get a little frustrated because they never start their channels until they're well into the process. Right. As some of them started a channel like they wanted to buy a boat and they want to move their family on it. So you might see one or two videos before that. But I want to know, what were you doing before that? What was your lives like before that? You know, what were you doing? And my wife and I don't have any kids. We look back on our history and we've done a lot of cool things. We lived on the road, not in an RV like these fancy people do. We lived on the road shovel bugging for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, in our SUV, just like with no house and all our stuff in storage. I mean, that's what these guys do.
Yeah.
Except we did it in the context of CRM, like so many shovel bums that are watching this right now or listening to it have done, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people do this without a base of operations. They just like, they're just like out there doing it. And I think more of us should tell that story. So what I want to do, I eventually want to be living full time, either in an RV or a boat. Ooh. We might move to an RV first because it's a little bit easier on the psychology to start with a boat, an RV rather than a boat.
Oh, interesting.
But along the way, this comes back to the sort of historical adventure related podcasts.
Yeah.
Along the way, we're going to be filming a lot of stuff and a lot of things that we're doing and then dropping those on our YouTube channel every Sunday.
Interesting. So, will that qualify as van life if you're in a big RV?
No, I don't think so. Van life is very particular.
Oh, is it?
It is. I mean, RV life is very different from van life because you don't see, to be honest, most of the people in RVs you see, like if we are hanging out in RV communities, we're going to be around a lot of 60 to 80 year old people. Right. Now, I think that's, from the YouTube videos I'm watching, I think there is a smaller community of people that have decided to make this transition in their lives, and they are younger, you know, 30s and 40s, maybe not 20s. 20s is more van life. I mean, it's just way less space, and you're okay with it when you're that age. I'm okay with that little space. It's really just, you know, if we had like a van, like a conversion van or something, and we were going out just for weeks or even months at a time, but we still had like a home base, I would be okay with that. But when you're living in it, I love my wife, but when you're living in it, sometimes you just need a little more expansion, right?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about more things. No. I'm talking about more space.
Yeah.
I told somebody the other day, if I've got 3 pairs of jeans, about 10 of these shirts and a laptop, that's really all I care about. That's really all I need, to be honest. I don't care about having anything else.
Yeah.
All my books are digital. All my music is digital. All my TV is digital.
True.
I don't want any other clothes. I don't want anything else. We need stuff to make food with, but you got things like Instant Pot and, you know, stuff like that. I just like, what more do you need? You know, I just want to, I want to travel around with very few things. So going back to this channel.
Yeah.
The whole point of this is, and when my wife gets back, she had to take kind of a last-minute trip to North Carolina, but so she's there now. But
business?
No, her sister. Birthday, actually. Her sister's trip to Milan for her birthday got canceled because she's pregnant and they have viruses over there. So they all went out to South Carolina.
So it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah, she went out because her sister's birthday is the 29th. So it was her 8th birthday.
We can talk about my trip to San Francisco because it was also something similar.
Nice. But anyway, so when she gets back, we're actually going to map out, because we have a vague idea of this because we've done it before, but we haven't done it in a while. But we're going to see what is our current debt and what is our current monthly expenses if we're making like minimum payments, right? Just to get a baseline. So what is a baseline? We have to make this much money to live every month right now.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is I want to say, okay, so what I want is we have to make this much money to live every month, right?
Yeah.
And to do that, we have to pay down the debt.
Yeah.
And I'm in a position right now with this current job I have and some other stuff I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is why I took this project in the next 2 weeks. You know, I don't have time to do this archaeology project, but it's a good payday for 2 weeks worth of work.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, why not do this? Because I'm going to take all of that, drop it on this loan I had for the last project I did for these guys and pay that thing off. Right.
Yeah.
So if I can, because if you look at it, you know, right now, if I just had to pull a number out of my, out of my ass, we probably need about $3,000 to $4,000 a month to pay our bills.
Yeah.
You know, when you factor in food and stuff like that. And that's two of us, and that's me running a business as well. I've got some business debt I got to worry about. But I want to get that down to like $1,500. You know, $1,500 to $2,000. Well, then the money you need to make every month becomes way less.
Oh, I know. Well, it's like when I was working at the bookstore, I definitely learned to live a lot less. And then last year I was out monitoring and I learned to live a lot more.
Well, listen to the CRM Archaeology podcast because we talked about that in the first segment. is field techs living that cycle of you know, poverty and riches, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all done it.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been on those projects where it's like, man, I can upgrade all my equipment, buy whatever I want right now.
I know.
And I'm okay with that from an upgrade and almost from a things standpoint. Like if you're going to buy a new computer, that's the kind of thing you use the time. Yeah, if you're buying a new car or repairing your car, you know, those are the kinds of things you do. But it's the people that buy stuff that's well beyond their means to support when that lucrative project goes away.
Yeah.
It's the people that go and say, oh, well, shoot, I've got a winter project, or I'm working for this company in the lab over the winter. I may as well get an apartment. What comes along with an apartment? A whole bunch of furniture.
Oh, my God. I'm not going to say the company, but it was years and years ago. You know, this this person asked, you know, was saying that they were thinking about buying a house because they've been saving.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, are you sure I'm going to have, like, you know, there's going to be lab work over the winter? And they said, oh, hell yeah, there's going to be lots of lab work over the winter.
Yeah.
And then as soon as she signs, like a week later, it's like, oh, sorry, there's not enough work.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, my God, that's like the thing. Like, why can't companies just be more honest?
I know.
I feel like they'd get a lot more respect if they were more honest.
Yeah. Let's take a break real quick for the recorded audience for the archaeology show, and we'll be back to continue this discussion. Ooh. And for the live audience, and if you want to join us, facebook.com/arcpodnet and also YouTube.
And happy archaeology fun time.
There you go. Back in a second. Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. Zencastr allows us to record high quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months, or go to Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on price and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's paleoimaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode. And we are back for the archaeology show. I don't know what episode number this is because we're recording it live. I don't know when this is going out. But thanks for joining us. If you're on the live stream, thanks for joining us. Send in your comments over on Facebook, over on YouTube, and we'll keep this show going. So you mentioned in the last segment something about San Francisco. You were there this weekend?
Last weekend. Yeah. My sister suddenly, unexpectedly, was going to show up in the Bay Area. And, you know, it's like we're both. Well, I mean, I'm not so busy. I mean, I'm editing, but, like, you know, when I'm doing that, I'm like face down. But, you know, we don't talk a lot. So one of the first things I did was like, why are you coming? Because I wanted to make sure that I didn't have to show up with like a funeral suit or anything. Like one of my aunts or something, or uncles had died. Because, you know, like I'm not that much in contact with, you know, not that I don't love them, but, you know, it's like life.
You just don't live there.
Yeah, but it turns out one of my nephews, he got a scholarship to a, he got a scholarship to a university in New Zealand, and he's about to wrap up like his last year. So he's flying through San Francisco, and, you know, he bought a ticket for his mom to, like, you know, also join him.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, and one of the things I will say is that, you know, if you just pay attention to YouTube or Facebook comments or like comments on like the New York Times, San Francisco is like supposed to be hell. Like the worst place on earth.
Right.
And California is the worst place on earth. I went there. It was just the same as when I was growing up or when I left. It was just like completely normal, except for the fact that there's like parking spaces now. That's like the one thing I will admit. Because
there's more parking now?
No. It's because people are using Uber to get around. They just park their car in a central spot and either use Uber or there's so many electric bicycles and so many scooters. And, like, I don't know where this hysteria over, like, lime trash and stuff came up, but it's just, like, you know, people just, like, you know, park their bikes just like they would park, like, a bike, you know, that they owned. Like, you know, there's like, I'm not sure if you've seen them, but certain lime bikes, or is it Lyft? Yes, Lyft bikes. They come with an integrated lock, and you just lock them to something. That way someone can't, like, you know, steal it. That way you can stay signed into that bike, and you can, like, leave.
Nice.
And then you just return it to the central docking station at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, you know, this whole idea of lime trash and, you know, all these bikes everywhere. It's just like, I feel like it's hysteria. Just like the way San Francisco is supposed to be hell is like hysteria. It was like just as nice and charming as normal.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to do all kinds of things we can. And this leads me, it just made me think about climate change and stuff like that. You know, and you look in the archaeological record and yes, climate change has happened throughout time.
Definitely.
But it's an undeniable fact that it's increased in the last century.
Yes.
And you can point to the reasons why. I mean, it's just science, right? The data's there to support that. And there have been times in the past, too, where a significant event has increased the speed and rate of climate change, but it's usually something massively destructive, like a meteor strike or, you know, lots of volcanoes spewing stuff into the air.
Yeah.
You know, will increase global warming and climate change. And things like this just makes you think about it because the God, I totally got derailed by Carlton. Uh-oh. As usual. He's saying that the A Life in Ruins people are not on the APNFB banner. It's about time you noticed that. It's been almost a year. Oh. Because I'm the one that does it. I do everything for this network, and I just haven't gotten around to getting your guys' pictures and adding them to the banner. I need to do that. Send me your pictures in Slack, black and white and square if you can. Anyway. So yours is on there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So anyway, looking at like Lime bikes and Lyft bikes or whatever those things are and e-bikes in general, you know, there are people that complain about stuff like that, but I really don't understand it because you're right. If you craft a city like cities in, you know, Denmark and Holland and even Germany, places like that, if you craft a city around biking and making that, making that culture, it really will lead to fewer cars on the road.
Yeah.
You know, which is a great thing.
Like I was shocked. Yeah. Completely shocked. Like I was able to find parking every place I went easily. And well, like not and have
that's
to pay.
That's a big statement for the Bay Area.
Yeah, especially San Francisco. Yeah. Like I was shocked, and like at spaces where you didn't need to pay, just like regular street parking. Those are normally like gold, but or at least they were before I left.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's just like amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I was totally shocked.
Yeah, it is crazy. It is crazy. And it's a good thing to know. It's a good thing to know. Yeah, because I've driven up through that area quite a few times. And man, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not.
Oh, it's also interesting at the SCA venue in Riverside. God, I forgot the last time I passed through there. Oh, God. Like, it was like at least 2 years ago, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. They also had the scooters and the bikes everywhere there. So, you know, that's going to be a fun way to get around town.
Nice.
Yeah, and they're all right next to the convention center. Like, there's actually like a docking station, I think, for some bike service right next to the convention venue.
Well, and I'll probably be bringing my bike, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my wife and I are going down for this is the Society of California Archaeology Conference that starts on the 12th, I think, of March.
Yeah, basically two Thursdays from now.
Yeah, and but we're going, as you are, we're rolling straight from that into another project for 10 days.
Yeah.
And we're going to be in a situation where I'd rather just ride my bike. So, you know, like around town and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But speaking of where we're going to be, we had already talked about this. Well, we're going to be in Ridgecrest, California.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cool things around there. Yes. I already put on my video list of videos I want to make.
Yeah.
Randsburg, which is the place we couldn't think about the other day when we were talking about it. The old, like, it's, I mean, I want to call it a ghost town. It's an old mining town, but there's actually people that live there. So there's that.
Like, was it you and me who were on a survey team down there, or was it me and someone else?
No, I was with you because I was telling somebody else just about this. Because do you remember Johannesburg is the little town that's right there?
Yeah, that's the one on the main freeway.
On 395, yeah. I found $20 bills right by that store that says junk on the wall.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about that time that we were like walking around there and some landowner came to us and said, oh yeah, we've been watching you guys for like a couple of days.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. But then also Trona.
Oh.
I want to go back out to Trona and film out there.
I've never been to Trona, actually.
You never went out? Oh, no. Man, Trona's great.
Interesting. I wouldn't mind going there.
Yeah, although, it's about 40 minutes from town. But
although I hear it gives off the, maybe I shouldn't say this out loud, but it gives you the, I've heard that it gives off the Hills Have Eyes vibe.
It's a little creepy. We shot some PCS videos out there.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a little creepy. I won't deny it. And it was the, it was in Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country, I think. I think it's Star Trek 5.
Oh.
I don't know if that's the right one, but it's the one with Spock's brother.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and they go to the center of the universe, and when they make it through this like outer shell thing and they get to this planet, and they're like cruising across the planet in a shuttlecraft, they land at Trona. Yeah.
I think, God, is that the Undiscovered Country? Because I know, I think that's the sixth one.
Oh, you know what? The Undiscovered, well, we're really geeking out now.
I know.
The Undiscovered Country, I think that might be the one with the Klingons, where they try to destroy Starfleet, as usual.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to archaeology. Trona is not really archaeology. It's I would like to see the Trona Pinnacles is what this is called. Look it up.
Those things.
Yeah, but they're like it used to be underwater, as a lot of things over there did. Yeah. And these were like mud jets that came up, and they're like mud stalagmites.
Yeah.
But they're 20, 40, 60 feet tall in some cases.
Yeah, and the reason why it's so sandy over there is because it's all most of that area used to be like a bunch of ancient lakes.
Yeah, so it was ancient lakes, but with like a hot spring underneath it, and it would cause this mud to bubble up and then harden and solidify as it went up under the water.
Kind of like Mono Lake?
Kind of, but a different mineral, a mineral that just like hardened like concrete. That's why the Trona Pinnacles are still there.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's super cool, which makes me think, I mean, they've been there for millennia, right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember when we went out to see that, because there are a couple of little reader boards out there. It's not like a park or anything. I don't even know who owns it, but probably just BLM land. But I would imagine there's some spiritual and religious Native American significance there. It's either that or just gave them the willies and they never went there. But because it is a pretty creepy place, and there's no vegetation, there were probably no animals nearby. There's no current sources of water near it. Like, you would have to go there and like go there for a specific reason. And I don't remember seeing any petroglyphs or pictographs or anything like that at the Pinnacles either. So
was it the right side or sort of the rocks?
Oh, it's like it's hard, but it's almost like a line, like you could just carve into it. Yeah. So,
well, because I noticed that if you if you get super familiar with like rock art sites, they're always like on the same sort of volcanic rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think one of the reasons for that is that basalt will like cleave at a certain way, and it forms these walls. So they were in areas where you could like walk up to it, which was really easy. You see a lot of rock art like that here in the Great Basin, probably because of its, like I said, it's ease of access, to be honest. And it looks good. You know, it's like if you're going to create something of religious or spiritual significance, you want people to see it.
True.
You know, at least locally, and putting it up basically on a wall. It's really Facebook. That's what it is. Yeah. Just writing on their wall. So,
although it is interesting, like I know that area, like the whole 395 corridor, there's like lots of rock art and lots of people with sawzalls.
Yeah.
Like I remember, God, it was years ago, I was going to go help update a site, and we went to look for it, and it was gone. Like someone had just taken a sawzall and just disappeared.
Yep.
Which is always fun.
So anyway, what else do we have? I know there's a lot of cool things I want to do when we get down on that project. And you know, going back to the YouTube channel, I'm not going to like link to it here. That's not the right venue for it. Maybe I will later. But it's, I mean, if you're friends with me on Facebook, I'll be posting about it, so you'll see it there. But
yeah.
I wrote out, of course, a Trello board to manage the videos that I want to shoot and the ones I already have that I haven't edited yet. And I've got on the list, again, Randsburg and Trona, but then also some other stuff that we're going to be doing archaeologically related on that project. And then the day after we get back from that project, we're going to Cancun.
Wow.
And I've never been to Cancun.
Really?
Yeah, and I've never been to Mexico aside from walking across the border in like, you know, El Centro to go to dinner. So I guess I've been to Mexico, but is it really Mexico? I mean, true. I guess it's Mexico, but and Cancun's not really Mexico either, for that matter. I mean, we're staying in a resort, for Christ's sake. You know, it's going to be more foreign
tourists.
Aren't
there like a lot of sites near there?
Yes. Well, that's the thing. So we're closer down. The resort we're staying at is down, I guess, south of Cancun is Playa del Carmen.
Yeah.
And I think I'm saying that right. And we're, if you look at a map, we're like 3/4 of the way down the coast towards Playa del Carmen. So closer to there.
Yeah.
Which is super cool because Cancun is a little more touristy, and Playa del Carmen, while still touristy, is also a little more local.
Yeah.
And I've just done some reading, and there's like some farmers markets and some really cool stuff down there.
Yeah.
Just to get a little more local flair and a little more out of the touristy scene. But then you get up towards Cancun, and there's a lot of cool museums up there and a lot of cool sites up there. So we plan on not only shooting a lot of video, but but also I'm hoping to do some podcast recording as well and talk to some of the museum curators
really?
And people like that.
Have you contacted anyone?
I haven't had any responses back. I don't know if that's because I don't speak Spanish, but
Google I'm Translate? Still working on
it. Well, it's not like they're responding and I can't read it. I just don't know if they're reading mine or care.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like translate before you send?
Oh, maybe. But I'm wary of doing that because it's not perfect.
Oh, I know.
And I don't want to say the wrong thing. It's also really difficult. Like I've looked at probably 4 or 5 different museums down in the Cancun area.
Yeah.
And finding something that's not just like info@the museum, you know, as the email address. Is really hard, you know, finding people's actual names. So I went over to LinkedIn and I was searching like the museum names on LinkedIn to see if it showed up as somebody's like job title.
Yeah.
And I found a couple and I sent them messages through LinkedIn, but I haven't had any responses back. So I'm trying everything I can. I might just have to walk in the front door with my recording equipment and say, hey, can I talk to the curator?
Wow. You know?
So I have no problem doing that. They'll either say yes or no. If anybody's listening to this or knows anyone that works and lives down in the Cancun area as an archaeologist, I would love to talk to them.
Ooh, or someone who's done work down there who might have like contacts still.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, if you know somebody because you worked in that area or you went to school with them or something like that, then seriously, let me know because I'd love to get some great material for the APN audience. Yeah, especially for this show because that's probably where it would go.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know. To continue on with this topic, I also have like, I mean, I don't have a Trello board. I actually just have a giant spreadsheet.
Yeah.
The thing is that I've been, you know, trying to do some preliminary research and all the stuff places I want to visit. Because I realized that, you know, for my 4th week, you know, because obviously I've got like scheduled out for like through December for like 2 weeks a month, but I want to increase to 4 weeks a month at some point. Hopefully we'll see if that happens. But I've been trying to do like, you know, there's certain places I want to visit, like Sand Mountain. You know, outside of Fallon and stuff like that. And you try to look up, try to do some preliminary research on these sites and nothing. It's just like, you know, it's just like a less than a paragraph worth of stuff. It's just like, man, I could like, you know, that's one of the reasons why I want to do like the series I want to do, which is namely going to these touristy sites and kind of bring an archaeologist eye to it.
Yeah.
You know, just because there isn't like a lot of info on any of these places.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only thing I'd learned about Randsburg is that it was founded in 1895. There were 2 fires, and they pulled $60 million worth of gold out of there, but they don't say when. Like, when they took the measure, like, you know, I assume it was 1930s money.
Well, and along those lines, I've noticed that a lot of the, you know, pamphlets or reading material or display boards or whatever, well, probably written by, if not archaeologists, people in, like, a museum setting, you know, like, they got a museum studies thing, or maybe they work for the BLM. You know, there are probably some archaeological, I guess, influence in writing it. But they do seem like they're written for a little bit too wide of an audience, which means you don't get a lot of information, right? It's just like straight up information. So you're right. Reading these things and then discussing them on the show or on a recording from an archaeological context, you know, I think would be real interesting.
Plus, there's also stuff that we can spot that, you know, or talk about, you know, that like people wouldn't necessarily notice.
Like because a lot of these places, they've got to point out the sexy stuff. You know, they got to point out the head frames and point out the structures and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, walking around and point out, well, yeah, but look at all these, you know, milk cans. You know, they're not pointing that out.
No.
You know, look at this pile of garbage over here. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
or like a friend of ours, like, you know, who was in Tonopah apparently at some point and found like the world's first guided bomb.
Nice.
You know, just sitting like in the middle, like someplace in town.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that'd be super cool to talk about in video.
I know. Oh, that I saw that. That was at the museum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that, that, you know, we have that unique perspective.
Hopefully.
I'll never forget when I learned. Somebody told me this because we found, God, was it near Tonopah? It might have been, but I was on a project and we were finding mining stuff and it was this old mining claim. There wasn't a whole lot of it left. And, but it was a, you know, relatively substantial operation in the day.
Yeah.
And in one of the trash piles, we were finding like, among other things, like I'll never forget, this one sticks out in my head, but Ghirardelli chocolate tins. And, and again, I don't know what the source is for this information.
Yeah.
But what I was told was when you start finding stuff like Ghirardelli chocolate tins, because that wasn't something your average miner had out at at the mine, it either meant that the town near them was becoming prosperous and stuff like that was becoming accessible. And usually at the same time, they were becoming prosperous. Like the mine was producing a large amount of gold. The miners are getting paid more money. Everybody's getting paid more money. So they have fancier things out there. You'll see that in the pottery, or the ceramics, I should say.
Ooh.
And also in the tins and the kind of food that they were eating.
Yeah.
You know, the luxury items start to come in when the success starts to come in. And there's a direct correlation with that. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's not like these days where you can see a single wide, you know, crappy trailer full of mold and falling apart, and yet they've got an 85-inch TV and a sound system inside, dish on the roof.
Oh my God! Like, you know, when I was spent that month installing cable, you know, I mean, there's like a certain part of Reno called Sun Valley. And, like, you know, I learned that all the rumors they said about Sun Valley were very true.
Yeah.
Like, I went to a house, and the place had was, like, a double wide, and there were holes in the floor, and yet they had, like, a special edition Sony PS4 mm-hmm. and a giant 60-inch flat screen, and they were paying to have this cable installed in this house that literally looked like, it literally looked like some of the sites, like some of the abandoned buildings we've, like, documented.
Yeah.
And the place was so gross and so disgusting that instead of, like, hanging out on, like, the furniture that was piled high with, like, clothes inside, they had all these cars in the front yard, and that was their living room. They were just, like, sitting in these cars, just, like you know, just playing on the internet with their phone and stuff.
Oh, my God.
It was like, wow.
Yeah. That's something. So.
I mean, now, of course, all those people in Sun Valley are going to be super angry at me, but whatever.
Well, that's right. Probably don't have a lot of listeners from Sun Valley.
You never know.
All right, well, let's take one more break for the recorded archaeology show. Again, if you want to join us live and you're listening to this recording, facebook.com/archpodnet, ARCHPODNET, yeah. But also on YouTube.
And happy archaeology fun time.
Back in a second. You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to archpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's archpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show. This is the recording, obviously, but of a live show that we do, as I mentioned at the end of the last segment. So, again, Facebook or YouTube, links will be in the show notes. All right. What's next?
Oh, you know what was... I don't know if you actually listen to the podcast, but I remember sending you a link to a podcast where these firefighters were using e-bikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, for, like, their I guess, fire surveys, you'd call them.
Yeah.
Where they're using 360-degree cameras, and then, was it thermal cameras?
Mm-hmm.
And then drones to, like, you know, basically get full coverage, which nice. That was super interesting. It's like, wow, how much faster would surveys be if we could just... especially those roadside ones, if we could just... I mean, you know... I realize it's almost the same as using an ATV for some archaeologists, but I feel like a bicycle has less impact. I might be wrong.
You're right, but less of, well, I guess it would be okay for a survey, though. It's like most of them have like a 40-mile range, which should be enough for a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you're actually pedaling as opposed to just like, you know, hitting the throttle.
Right, right. Well, and a lot of these, I mean, they're fat bike tires and stuff like that, so they can get over some terrain.
Yeah.
Be an interesting way to get out to places.
Oh, yeah. My God. You know what's interesting? I was watching a YouTube channel, and the thing is, this channel, like, specializes in RC planes and drones.
Yeah.
And they made their own, like they made their own personal flight vehicle in the form of, like, a quadcopter drone. And they're flying it around. I'm thinking, wow, would you try something like that?
I mean, maybe not the first version of it. Unless I built it, and I knew a lot about it, you know?
Yeah.
But, that would be crazy.
Because, like, imagine, you know, like, a lot of people, like, you know, one of my undergrad professors actually learned how to, got his pilot's license so he could, like, you know, do, you know, photogrammetry and do aerial survey. But imagine if you could just, like, roll up in with a one-person size, like, human pout, like, I don't know, you know what you'd call it, like, personal flight vehicle in the back of your pickup truck and could just, like, fly it around.
I mean, if you're talking about that, why not just send a drone out? What do you need a person on there for?
Oh, that's true, too.
You know? But that reminds me, though. I did see a YouTube commercial this morning.
Yeah.
For, you know, I've got a light. It's not down here now, but the Loom cubes.
Yeah. They have the new 2.0.
Yeah, well, they showed them in this nice little adapter that hooks right onto the arms of a DJI Mavic drone. And they had one on either side, and they're such bright lights that they were showing, like, nighttime surveys, like people going out and doing nighttime surveys, like power lines and stuff like that. I don't know why you do this at night, but anyway, they were showing that and showing other things happening at night. But what I was thinking about was, like, historic mine surveys.
Ooh.
Like getting inside the mine and being able to illuminate nice and easy. Because one of the problems of flying inside a mine is obviously there's two problems. One, if there's a lot of gases in the mine, you're probably going to ignite it with the electric motors on the drone.
Oh, so that was my first thought.
Yeah. But if there aren't, if maybe it's well ventilated, it's just abandoned. Getting down in there with a bigger drone is pretty hard because a lot of times there's cave in, there's wood all over the place. So you got to be really careful. But being able to kind of light your way and at least map part of it out. Of course, if you do plan on doing this, it would be easier to do it with an adit or something that was horizontal. Yeah, but when you're going in the drone, if you go around a corner or you go up or down a shaft or some sort of like vent shaft or something, you're going to lose the signal.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know, Adam Savage from MythBusters, and now he's got his YouTube channel. Adam Savage is tested. He was gotten loaned by one of those Boston Dynamics dogs.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
He made that rickshaw?
Yeah. I was thinking, man, you could totally send that out in a survey or down a mine shaft.
Yeah, probably.
Because the other thing I was thinking about flying a drone in a mine shaft is that sometimes the gases might alter the air density and make the flight characteristics kind of wonky.
Yeah, I suppose they could a little bit. Yeah, but I think those things are good enough to adjust for it. But the other thing you lose is the GPS stabilization. So you need localized GPS repeaters inside of there.
True. Although, God, there are more and more drones coming in with integrating that. I mean, I know Skydio was the first one. It's probably the best one. But some of these companies are developing their own kind of obstacle avoidance technology. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The power. God, is it the Power Egg?
I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that came out at CES. The one that looks,
I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that can also be a camcorder or a gimbal.
Right.
I really want that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely pretty cool. So.
Of course, I have to get a new computer first.
You're in a constant state of needing a new computer.
I know.
You always want to upgrade.
Well, because, the software just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about the other day, the software I use is optimized for the high-end computers. And anything less, sometimes it won't even run. Or it'll crash every 5 minutes like it did on me last night.
Yeah.
Even though I still love the software more than, way more than Premiere Pro.
Yes. Hey, while I'm thinking about it, it's not going to be this month, of course, but possibly in the May timeframe, because I think April's kind of booked up right now, but in the May timeframe, definitely over the summer, although I don't know when yet, my wife and I are going to be doing a lot more road trips.
Ooh.
And one of the things that I'm starting to put some stuff on the calendar so we can have these spots where we need to be in a place, and in between, you're just kind of wherever you're at.
Yeah.
And one of them, for the first time, I've never really been able to go just because, I don't know, circumstances, but the Pecos Conference. I've never been to the Pecos Conference.
Is that the one where you go camping?
Well, I think you can camp. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere. So.
Or is that the one that's in the tents?
It's both. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, so they put up these big tents for the lectures and the presentations. They've got poster sessions. I mean, it's a full conference.
Yeah,
I've just never been, and it's in the beginning of August this year.
Yeah.
So, but what I wanted to say is, with us going around, I do want to do some more recording for the APN on site, different places. So if you've got a project or an excavation, or not even excavation, if you're just doing a long-term CRM project or something like that, I'll be mentioning this throughout. But if you guys are, I would love to show up and, go out with some people in the field for the day and, or just talk to them at the hotel at the end of the day over some beers in the parking lot, tailgating out at the end of the day, whatever you guys are doing, and just talk to people, talk to people about cool things that are going on. If your project is under wraps from a security standpoint or from a conversational standpoint, because a lot of them are. I totally understand that. That doesn't mean we can't talk about archaeology in general, right? Like the CRM archaeology and what you're doing. We don't need to talk specifics of the project. We don't even need to say what town we're in. We don't need to say anything. But it's fun just talking to people that are in the moment, in the field, and they have that real perspective right there.
Although first, I feel like you have to cycle some of these, some of the older archaeologists who definitely are very paranoid and want everything locked down. Like you can't even say what you're doing in town. Like you can't even tell people you're an archaeologist if you're there.
Well, thinking like that is why our field is in the position it's in.
I know.
Nobody knows what we do or why we do it. And for that reason, we have no champions.
Oh, it's interesting. A buddy of mine, she had to get her car repaired. And so she brought her car to a local place to get it repaired. And they were disappointed because, they thought that the CRM company that we both worked for was a secret government agency because they're so secretive. I thought, wow.
I wish we worked for secret government agencies. We'd make a lot more money.
I know. Oh, you know what's interesting? I mean, this will probably be out of date by the time this goes on air, but was it shovel bums? Like the you can be like a, you can be a PI in Saudi Arabia if you want, if you read your shovel bums emails.
I missed that one.
Yeah, and they're also looking for a project manager.
That must be through the government, right? Defense Department or something?
Yeah. Well, no, it's like, I think it's for the Saudi government.
Oh, for their government?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, which I thought was super cool. Although, I don't know. I assume you'd have to be, you know, capable.
Have some knowledge of the archaeology over there, too.
Well, that, too. But also, like, you know, like, interested in living over there for a long period of time.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like here.
Be interesting.
Yeah. Like, you know, not everyone wants to live in, like, Tonopah and be a BLM archaeologist there. Like, live there for, like, 20 years.
I mean, we know a couple of people that live in Tonopah. They don't even work for the BLM. You know what I'm talking about?
Maybe.
Yeah. I see him at the NAs all the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That's next week, isn't it?
I think so. I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. That's the problem with them having it like right outside of Vegas, but not close enough to Vegas to make it worthwhile to go.
Yeah.
Especially that town.
Yeah. If you want to go to the Nevada Archaeological Association conference and you're watching this live, because by the time I release this, it'll be after the conference. Or I'll probably release this next Saturday and it'll be during the conference. So, but if you're live with us right now and you want to go, it's in Pahrump, I think.
Yeah.
I've never actually been to Pahrump.
You know, neither have I.
Yeah. Because can you even drive through Pahrump? Or is it like a destination? I feel like Pahrump's at the end of a dead end road near Death Valley. Like, that's always in my head, like what Pahrump is.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's probably wrong. I'm sure you can drive through it, but I don't know where you're going. So.
Oh, you know what's interesting? Yeah. I mean, I'm not. So are you going to just be doing podcasting at the SCAs, or are you going to be doing some video recording?
I'm hoping to do a little bit of both. Especially, it depends if the Wi-Fi is good. We might be doing some more Facebook Live stuff with the GoPro as well.
Oh, because I have totally been saving up my data. So I should at least have, like, we should be able to at least do a 15-20 minute show. I don't know how much gigs, like, this app, like, sends out or uses.
Well, like I said, this is a small conference. So there's all the possibility that they will have Wi-Fi. That's not half bad. And we can actually transmit with it.
Yeah.
So
I'm also going to be recording a video going down there. I'm gonna be like trying to see what advice people have.
Nice.
Like, oh my god, like you and I both know this guy. I think he's one of the moderators for was it Archaeo Field Techs?
Yeah,
he used to go around for like random reasons asking people. God, what he used to ask at the SCA? He used to ask what's your field setup, or what's your favorite piece of field gear, something like that. I don't even know why he would ask people that. He would just ask people that. But I want to do something similar, except on video.
Nice.
Except I'm going to be asking them for conference advice.
There you go.
Like, don't be that guy at the bar who's, like, swaying and, like, you know, hanging on to people while trying to, like, hand out your resume and say what an awesome report writer you are.
Right, right.
Because that does not make the best impression. More importantly, that's not why you're at the bar. You're not at the bar to, like, you know, solicit people's, like, resumes or, like, try to give them job leads. Like, that's not the way you network.
No, it's interesting you're bringing that up, because I was talking about this the other day with somebody. People get networking wrong all the time.
Oh, all the time.
I'm in networking things here in Reno that aren't archaeology related, and they're still doing it the wrong way. Like,
are they?
I go to this one thing every week. It's called Brewing Up Business Reno. We're at a different pub, and you do get a handful of people in there that are just very forward with their, you know, this is what I do, and This is how I can help you, right?
Yeah.
There is a time and a place for that during that hour. You know, at the very beginning when you introduce yourself, it's really just 10 seconds of, you know, hi, I'm Chris Webster and this is what I do. You know, you're not like, you know, handing out business cards. But at the end, you know, when after the discussion's over, yeah, sure. If somebody says, hey, can I get your card? I want to talk to you about some stuff later on. You're like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
This is not the venue for making a deal, though.
No.
This is the venue for making contacts and more importantly than that, making friendships.
Yeah.
Friendships are what breed real networking, you know, and that's what, man, this is such a hot topic, because we talked about this for like 40 minutes on the Sierra Mark podcast just an hour ago.
Well, the thing is, it's like I had a buddy, you know, and like I had submitted a resume to a company that's on the other side of the mountain.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, we got a whole, you know, we've got like a long-term monitoring gig if you want it right now. And we've also got a lot of stuff coming up over the field season. I'm like, I will skip the monitoring since I just did that for the past year. But then I passed on the lead to like someone else at random.
Yeah.
You know, a friend, because, you know, she like, you know, is it, you know, she like, that's like up her wheelhouse. That's like up her alley. That's something that she can do. And, you know, hopefully they gave her the job, but you never know. But the thing is, she wasn't always pestering me about like job leads or trying to give me her resume or anything or give me her card. You know, it's just like because, you know, she's a buddy.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
By the way, before, you know, we'll get back to that topic in a sec, but someone said, actually came up with a good idea. Automated screening drone with built-in strata for 32nd of an inch screens. Or basically a screening drone.
I mean, they have auto screening machines right now.
I know, like Grizzlies.
Yeah, but nothing you can like bring out in the field with you.
I know, yet.
Yeah, because if you're talking about a screening drone, you also need a shoveling drone.
Well, I guess that's true too.
Right. Yeah, that would be hard to do.
Oh, I think. Alternatively, that does make me think of the little Power Wheels sized little excavators that you see sometimes kids playing with.
it makes me think of a larger issue though, because I keep saying. I also can't remember a podcast where I didn't mention the word drone like in the past year. But anyway, I've always said that drone survey, and when I say drone survey, like initial drone survey for pedestrian survey, not like shovel testing survey, but initial drone survey is not that hard. There's people doing it, right? Yeah. We interviewed somebody on the Archaeotech podcast, who they basically create 3D photogrammetric models from drone survey. I think it's over somewhere in Italy or something like that.
Oh, I was listening to that one.
Yeah.
There's most of it.
Yeah. And then they created an algorithm basically to have the computer system identify pottery, because that's the thing that they find out there.
Yeah.
And they were able to run that algorithm, this machine learning algorithm, over the overlay and then find stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's basically drone survey. The drone's not looking like live. I mean, you're taking the images, you're doing something with them, and then you're looking to see what you can find.
Yeah.
Without going in the field. And sometimes it's just a safety thing, right? But I'm always like, right tool for the right job. And I've never really thought about taking a drone to the next level. Because my thought, like this project we're going to do in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You could easily survey an entire area in 2 days with a drone.
Yeah.
Right? But we're going to take 10 days to do it. But you could easily do it in 2 or 3 days with a drone. And then I'd spend another day or two with a larger group of people, maybe even like 40 people, like crowdsourcing it online and saying, hey, look over these. Here's what you're looking for. Identify the places where there could be archaeological sites. And then we go out to the coordinates for the previously recorded sites, and we go out to the coordinates for the things people thought were sites that you could tell from the drone survey. And I've always thought that that's where the human element comes in, and I've never really thought about, because we don't want to think about automating that part. Right now, we're only thinking ahead to, you know, we're going to get the initial survey done because it can be done quicker and more efficiently and safer by machine. But then bring in the archaeologist when you go to the excavation phase. But now I'm thinking, well, what would be the advantage? Let's think 50, 100 years into the future. What would be the advantage of basically having machines do the excavation phase as well, or at least better subsurface imaging.
Ooh.
So you don't have to excavate at all, because obviously we'd like to be non-destructive.
Of course.
Unless we're pulling stuff out for a reason. Yeah. But so what would be the advantage to having machines there? And I think the only reason we would end up going that route is thinking way into the future, when people basically have fewer jobs, like there's fewer people that actually work, and therefore fewer people that are actually gaining those skill sets, and we might be going back to archaeologists that basically have a theoretical knowledge and not a field knowledge, and they're just analyzing the data from the mechanical excavations.
Oh my God, you know,
or science fiction, but whatever.
I was also thinking, my God, one of the reasons why I was thinking about the Nevada caucus is because in Iowa there was like a special app they developed.
Yes.
Yeah, that
famously failed.
Yes, and they were going to use the same app here in Nevada.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Instead, they used an off-the-shelf Google app. Like, and Google did not make any concessions or special changes for them. They just had like some people in Vegas to like answer questions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, it made me think that you were talking about with like companies these days obsessing over like developing their own like form-taking apps for the field. There's, you know, and it's just like, do you think there's gonna be a moment where like a majority of these companies just realize that that, you know, basically had their Iowa moment and like come to like something standardized?
I don't know, man. I'd like to think so, you know, I mean, in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to think that standardization in this field, as far as, you know, form. Here's the problem. We don't even have standardized forms yet.
Oh, I know.
You know, like the closest that I've ever seen to standardized forms is the BLM IMAX forms.
Yeah.
Right. And that's here in Nevada. And it used to be, even more standardized. The weird thing is we've gotten less standardized, because it used to be the Intermountain Antiquities Computer System. That's what IMAX stands for.
Yeah.
And it went from, I think Wyoming used it.
Yeah.
I think Montana.
Idaho,
Colorado.
Yeah.
And then of course, Utah and Nevada.
Yeah.
But I don't know when this happened, but at some point they all diverged. And I don't know what the other states are doing, but I know Utah's got their own. They put out a new one a couple of years ago.
They did?
Nevada put out a new one in 2012.
Oh, I thought we just used the standard short form.
Yeah, but that's my point. They changed from the long form with the part A, B, C, and D to just a short form. That's different than the IMAX form. You know, the short form is not the IMAX form. I mean, they're calling it that, but it's not really.
Oh.
So, you know, I mean, the IMAX, the real IMAX form was the long form, part A, part B, part C, part D.
Yeah.
And the short form was intended for smaller sites where you just need to record some quick information. But then when they went to the short form, they diverged from the whole IMAX system because the short form is not, you put all the information on the short form.
Yeah.
But the thing I didn't like about it, where digital archaeology comes in and helps, is the short form requires you to actually know some things about site recording. But let's be honest, a lot of people out there don't probably have a lot of site recording experience. I mean, that's just a fact of CRM archaeology. There's a high turnover.
True.
So when you're not prompted for all the different pieces of information and you're expected to just know it and write it down in a paragraph, that becomes a lot more difficult. And that's why when I've written up forms for myself and for WildNote, for say Nevada IMAX forms, I mean, there's other prompts in there, but it still produces the short form.
Yeah.
You know, but there's other prompts in there so that you're not missing something. I've always said that I don't care what state you're working, if you have a site form, it's not a site form. It's a checklist. It's a checklist to make sure you don't miss something.
Yeah.
That's all a site form is. The California DPR forms, as annoyingly long as they are, they're probably some of the most detailed archaeological checklists that I've ever seen.
They definitely are.
You know, I mean, and that's really all it is. In the field, when you get back in the office, you can do your analysis, move things around, but in the field, it's a checklist so you don't miss stuff. That's how I think you have to see it.
Although, reading over a lot of California site forms like last year, it's like, wow, a lot of people don't even bother filling out most of it.
Yeah.
And more importantly, I think the craziest thing is where I would come across a site form, it would be for like what in this state would just be an isolate.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, you gave a site number to like one arrowhead or one projectile point?
In a lot of areas, like the primary form, which is the first one, it's used for isolates.
Which is crazy to me.
It's because they don't have another way to record isolates in a lot of the information center regions. They don't have a special like isolate category. I kind of actually agree with it.
Really?
Like if you're just going to put down minimal information, if you turn in that primary form, it's a piece of paper that says this thing is here. They assign a number to it and it can go in a database. You know, if they had what surprises me is they have like 13 forms. Why isn't one of them an isolate form?
Oh, see?
Like that's why they just used the primary
record. Yeah, like they even have like a linear feature form. Yeah. They have rock art forms.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Because I know in this state, like you just like fill out a spreadsheet, right?
There's no standard.
Oh, there's
not? You just turn them in.
Oh.
Yeah, like you said, it's usually on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have an isolate form in WildNote for Nevada that people can use, and it's all the basic information about an isolate. So.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no standard for turning in isolates. I mean, obviously you need coordinates, a description, a photograph if necessary, you know, if it's a rare or some sort of feature or artifact. And that's the other thing is isolated features.
Yeah.
You can have isolated features in Nevada, but in a lot of places a feature is inherently a site.
Oh, that's true. Because, you know, how many prospect pits are there in this state?
I know people still get it wrong, though, because if there's a prospect pit with like a can or a piece of glass.
Oh, that's a site.
That's a site.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people are like, well, it's associated with a prospect pit. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No.
That's a site.
Yeah. I mean, it's two things.
Yeah. And if you get, you know, what happens if you get 10,000 of those in a small area? Now you've got a district.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. Now they are all features.
Oh, God. I forgot. Yeah. Where was it? Was it Battle Mountain where we were recording that on that big project out there?
Well, there was one big one out there, the Copper Queen, I think it was called.
Yeah. And like, you know, we were just like walking along, like the four of us, like, you know, the whole, you know, the crew was on.
Hundreds of features.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
Yeah. And that's also where you found like the ice cream truck.
Yeah. I just saw that in my Instagram feed, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I took a picture of it a long time ago. I was looking for it to show somebody because we were talking about it. Yeah. It was an ice cream truck. It was the freezer box portion of an ice cream truck that was sitting on the top of a hill away from the mine.
Yeah.
Like sufficiently away from the mine with dirt built up around it. And I think they used it. The ice cream truck has a lot of natural insulation because it's a freezer truck.
Yeah.
And from what I was told, I don't think we knew this going up there. Maybe somebody said it. Somebody smarter than you or me when they saw it said they used it to store their explosives.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they use a lot of explosives on a mine. That would be a natural place to store them.
Oh, I was thinking because, you know, I still have van life in my mind. And, you know, I've seen like YouTube videos where people are doing what's like stealth van life.
Yeah.
Where like they rent like a U-Haul, like U-Haul van and just like convert it into like, you know,
it's like a living room inside.
Yeah. You know, for like a week or whatever.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I would want to live in the back of a U-Haul truck. Talk about no insulation.
You know, well, I mean, it depends if you like you bought it and own it.
Well, yeah, but if you rent it for the week and you try to do that, it's not going to be very good.
True.
But you can, I imagine you could make a U-Haul truck look pretty nice in the back if you remodeled the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do that with a rental. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for the archaeology show recording and for You Call This Archaeology. So, again, facebook.com/archpodnet, ARCHPODNET, if you want to join us live. We're also, this recording will be on the archaeology show. I keep pointing to the mixer because this is where the recording is happening. And also, I think we're going to keep doing this in this simple way a lot more. I don't think the audio is quite as good for the live audience, but they can still hear us.
Yeah.
If you couldn't, they would say something.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded fine when I was watching TV earlier.
Yeah. So there you go. And if you want to watch this on Richie's side, because we're not doing this on the APN YouTube, we do have one kind of.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, but we never use it.
Oh, all right.
But Richie has a YouTube channel.
Yeah. Happy Archaeology Fun Time.
So check that out. He's got a lot of really cool stuff on there, posting a lot more videos, a lot of helper stuff for people new in the field.
Yeah, and a lot more stuff upcoming.
There you go.
At least twice a month.
That's it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Cool.
Join us live next time if you didn't this time. And for those that did join us live this time, thanks a lot. And what really helps is if you see us live, share it.
Oh, that too.
Share it somewhere. I try to share it to all the groups, but at some point I'm going to get banned for sharing too much.
Really?
So I need you to share it for me. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song, I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning, keep discovering new things, and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.